One of the many tremendous things about Dante's Divine Comedy are the images that he offers of spiritual truths that, when you try to describe them, seem paradoxical, impossible, not capable of being understood, ineffable. And yet there's something about the image that conveys the truth of what Dante, the pilgrim, is undergoing on the journey, and for me, offers great hope and also a vision of true transformation, not just development, not even emergence of new kinds of consciousness, but radical revelations of the nature of reality. So I wanted to offer eight of Dante's ineffable images that I hope might be intriguing, encouraging, and almost as a goal to hope and yearn for. They begin with the first in the darkest moment of the Divine Comedy, in the Inferno, when Dante and Virgil reach the floor of hell. It's frozen solid. Dante doesn't have a fiery inferno. He knows that actually true hellishness is being so far away from the divine source that you almost fall out of life itself. And so they encounter Lucifer, frozen solid, close to absolute zero. But what Virgil tells Dante is that now they've seen the worst, they must continue on to the worst. Quite literally, they clamber onto the body of Lucifer, and quite surprisingly, the darkness itself starts to lighten. There's an inversion. Carl Jung would call it an antiodromia. And this is the first impossible truth that Dante shows with this image, which is that the way through the darkness is actually into the darkness, not trying to find a way out, not trying to seek light when light can't be found, but to hang on in the darkness because the darkness will itself change. It's a theme that's picked up elsewhere in wisdom traditions. The dark night of the soul is like this. In its true meaning, it's not just a bad period, but it's a way forward found in the midst of the bad period. And Dante knows that as well when they clamber onto the body of Lucifer. And so, quite by surprise, the darkness itself leads to light. The first of Dante's ineffable images. A second is found on Mount Purgatory in the second part of the Divine Comedy, when they're finding their way up the slopes. It's a very different mood now. There is lots of suffering and struggle and difficulty and confusion, but it's always held by the presence of the light of hope and the love of the goal. But nonetheless, there's still a lot of these seemingly impossible moments for Dante. And one of them occurs on the first night of their time on Mount Purgatory, when Dante dreams, and he dreams a terrible nightmare. He dreams that he's witnessing a rape, a pillage, lust out of control, when he dreams of the myth of Jupiter descending to steal the youth Ganymede to have him stood by his side. And Dante wakes and is deeply distressed by this because he knows that dreams are a reflection of his own psyche. And so this lust and pillage and rape is part of who he is. And it feels too much. He thought he was on the way now. He thought the darkness was starting to leave him, and it feels like it's flooded back and returned. But Virgil tells him that whilst he dreamed, something else was happening, that St. Lucy, one of Dante's patron saints, had appeared. And she had carried him up the mountain. So what seemed to him like a carrying off was actually a carrying up. And it's another brilliant image, because I think often we can have a sense of ourselves that feels hopeless, that feels disastrous, like we never really will change. We're going to be trapped in our old thoughts, our own habits, our own fears, that which frightened us. And yet Dante's showing in this image of the dream that turned out to be help, that we don't know what's going on often, but we can trust that there's more going on than meets our eye, even our nocturnal eye, hoping that dreams might reveal more to us. So that's the second of my ineffable images. There's more going on than meets the eye. The third is also on Mount Purgatory, and this is towards the top, and this happens several times in the Divine Comedy, but Beatrice now encourages Dante to look back at the journey where they've been. Again, it's quite a common theme in wisdom traditions, the idea of rising above the earth, and that which seems so preoccupying in one moment starts to look less important as you see more, and then you rise a bit further, and even that which looked important from the slightly higher vantage itself starts to look less and less important. And Beatrice, on two or three occasions, encourages Dante to look back and consider where he's come from, looking back down Mount Purgatory into the Inferno, and then as they rise in the Paradise, looking back across the celestial spheres, and then as they enter the Imperium outside of space and time altogether, looking back across space and time, the most expansive and tremendous of visions. And again, it's a really useful image to have when we're preoccupied in a particular moment, to, in our mind's eye, take the longer view, consider where we've come from, remember how maybe yesterday we were troubled too, and yet that trouble passed, and how last week we knew of difficulty, and yet more's happened since. That sense of the continual unpacking of things that you get from the higher, the more wider perspective that the mind's eye can bring, and that every so often happens in a more visionary way, as Dante experiences with Beatrice. So that's the third of these ineffable images, the taking perspective, not living on the flat land of the everyday, but developing that capacity to see the more. The fourth of Dante's ineffable images now happens in the Paradise alone. And here, Dante, seeing the unsayable, really starts to take off. And a very intriguing one that occurs, first of all, in the planetary sphere of Mercury, is that he realizes he can no longer see the faces of the souls that he's encountering in the Paradise. He can see their light, he can detect their presence, he often knows who they are, and they can converse and commune. They can delight and reveal divine truths to each other, and yet Dante can't see their faces. And I think what this is saying is that in order to see the face of another person, we must first of all know our own face, and know that our faces are the revelation of our soul, our inner spirit, who we are in the divine light. The face of God is seen everywhere in the faces of other human beings, and then on the face of all that exists, ultimately, to the person who can see that aright. And so this image of Dante not seeing the faces, only seeing the reflection, the light, the echo in the voice, the personality, and having to learn that he too can only know himself at the level of the echo of the voice, of the personality, that which seems familiar. This becomes a crucial part of his journey in Paradise, learning to understand himself to be part of the divine face. And as that becomes possible for himself, he sees the truth of that in the people around him. And so their true faces start to reappear. An extraordinary image that you can't see the face of someone even when you're looking at them, unless you know that your own face is the divine presence too. Again, moving on from a flatland appearance is only approach to reality that Dante's encouraging us to do when he sees what seems paradoxical, strange, ineffable, improbable, unsayable. A fifth image brings paradox to the fore in a different way. This is in the planetary sphere of Jupiter. And now what he sees is all the souls are brilliantly themselves in their presence, in their light. And yet, the more and more brilliantly they are themselves in their presence and light, the more they're also one in a kind of tremendous harmony. And then he hears the soul speak in the sphere of Jupiter, and he can't tell whether they're saying I or whether they're saying we, the first person singular and the first person plural, are one and the same, he realizes. And this is a really crucial, almost unsayable spiritual truth. I think that matters really today a lot, because people often feel that spiritual development comes with the dissolving of the ego, with the lessening of the sense of I, with the overcoming of individuality. But what Dante's saying, and again, this is in other wisdom traditions, is that actually it's through the sense of one's individuality growing, becoming more and more expansive. It's knowing that your capacity, my capacity to say I am, is actually only possible because of a wider I am that exists in the cosmos, the divine I am. And the mistake the ego makes is thinking it's an isolated I am, when really its sense of itself can become porous to a wider and wider sense of self. And so eventually, as Dante sees in the sphere of Jupiter, you don't know whether you're saying I or we, because they're actually one and the same thing, whereas many myriad reflections of the one. Dante sees that in the sphere of Jupiter, as the souls are both brilliantly fully themselves and yet also brilliantly and fully part of the whole. A great image to hold on to when you're struggling with this sense of your I am-ness, the problems of the ego and so on. A fifth image that Dante offers. A sixth has to do with how he starts to try to show us the very, very deepest, most profound, subtle, and yet at the same time most essential truths that he's now seeing in the higher reaches of the paradise. He's moving into the Imperium now, that space beyond time and space altogether, where the infinite and the finite, the mortal and the immortal, all is known to be held in the divine presence. And one image that I really like that he gives here is, he says it's like gazing on the image of a mountain that's perfectly reflected in a completely still lake. And as you gaze on this image of the mountain and its reflection in the lake, you start not to be able to tell the difference between the source and the image, between the mountain and its reflection. It's like they become part of one image. And I love this metaphor, because what it shows is that the source and the image, though clearly different, the divine source is the divine source, and we are the creatures of the divine source, the image of the divine source. And yet that difference can be held at the same time as knowing that all is one. There's a unity of being in that as well. And you get that when you gaze on this image of the mountain and its perfectly still reflection, and realize that that picture is one beautiful picture. There's a sense of difference without distinction, as Coleridge puts it. And Dante knew that as well. Another seemingly paradoxical, seemingly ineffable expression of spiritual truth. The seventh that I wanted to offer is one that Dante tells mythologically. And he's starting now, as he's approaching the culmination, the fullness of the experience that has emerged within him, manifest within him, revealed itself, transformed him, as he himself is undergoing this transformation that he tells in the Divine Comedy. He uses the myth of Neptune seeing the Argonauts on the Argon being led by Jason across the Black Sea. And the Argon was said to be the first ship, so it's a new piece of technology. And the story goes that as Neptune looked up from the depths and saw this strange shadow moving across the surface of the water, he didn't know what he was seeing. He hadn't seen a ship before. A ship hadn't existed before. And so there was no category in his consciousness to put this new thing in. And the myth goes that Neptune spent many centuries wrestling with this shadow, wrestling with this image, not knowing what it was, until gradually his consciousness caught up with the image of Jason and the Argonauts on the Argo racing across the surface of the Black Sea. And it's a brilliant image because it's about our consciousness catching up with the consciousness required to know these things. It's another reflection on the allure of the ineffable, the wrestling with the ineffable, but the promise of what is unsayable too. Neptune gazing on the Argonauts in their new thing that he didn't know how to see until his consciousness had emerged in order to do so. That too is a great spiritual truth. And it brings us to the final, the eighth of the images. There are many more, but just for the sake of now, here's an eighth. And this is the culmination of the Divine Comedy, when Dante knows himself to be spinning like a perfect wheel with the sun, with the love that moves the sun and the other stars, spinning like a perfect wheel with the love that moves the sun and the other stars. And this is such an important culmination, because what it does is it brings together seeming opposites. It brings together movement with stillness. It brings together the many with the one. It brings together relationship with perfect unity. And I love this image in the Divine Comedy because it seems even in spiritual texts, it's often felt you have to choose, you know, is there many things or one thing? Is relationship the most important, or is unity the most important? Is movement and flux that which most defines reality, or is stillness and equanimity that which is most basic? And the truth is that a third dimension comes through on the spiritual journey, which Dante captures in this image of spinning with the love that moves the sun and the other stars. The love is the unifying factor that brings all this dynamism together. The many is actually as many manifestations of the one, that relationship is now so complete that actually it's a relationship that's become the same as a unity. I find this image very important to hold on to, a kind of heuristic that might inspire us not to feel we have to choose one or the other, kind of decide in a rational way, but hold out for the possibility that we'll get drawn to this fuller and fuller realization. So they're my eight seeings of the unsayable, ineffable images that Dante offers us. In the darkness, not around, through, avoiding, trying to fight the darkness, but in the darkness light comes, as Dante sees when they clamber on the body of Lucifer. That the dream, the sense of ourselves that can feel so horrible, actually might conceal that which is tremendous happening around us. The looking down, gaining perspective, not being preoccupied with the moment, but seeing that that presence is part of a much wider and wider truth. Knowing that we only see the divine face in all things when we understand the divine within ourselves, and then we realize the myriad reflections and become capable of seeing that, as the Sufis say, everywhere is the divine face, including, perhaps most surprising of all, ourselves. There's no distinction between I and we, that the more we become fully ourselves as individuals, the more that individuality becomes a reflection of the divine I am, Dante sees in the sphere of Jupiter. And then my sixth image was how the source and the image, the original and the reflection, the divine and the created, two become part of one tremendous image, as Dante sees when he gazes on the mountain reflected in the stillness of the lake. Seventh was Neptune gazing up at this new thing, the Argon, and not being able to see it because his consciousness wasn't yet ready to see it. And yet, in time, his consciousness grew, expanded, transformed, and so became capable of embracing this new thing within its perception. That too is part of the spiritual journey. And then finally, all things come together, not because there's one thing chosen over another, relationship or unity, movement or stillness, many or one, but because the deeper, more essential, but also simpler truth has now shown itself, and we've become part of that which has shown itself. That, like Dante, we can spin with the love that moves the sun and the other stars.